this is a topic that is goes right to the heart of what Cambridge is about. I mean, David gave a brilliant introduction on what Cambridge in Africa can do. Do you know, I would agree with everything he said, but for one word. It's okay. Since when has anything ever been okay in Cambridge? We don't do okay. Our job is actually to make sure that we show the leadership and the dimensions of a problem where we can make a significant difference. And okay is all right to start off with, but okay has got to lead to better and an enhancement of what we're actually able to do. The achievements speak for themselves. I don't need to dwell on them. They're absolutely fantastic. We're supported by great organizations worldwide. And this program has bitten deep into the heart of Cambridge. It's a typical Cambridge product. Nothing in Cambridge happens because I sit there in the old schools and say, isn't it a good thing we ought to do something about Africa? Nor could Alison, my predecessor. It happens because staff and students in this university want to do something about it. And the role of the university, frankly, is to catalyze their efforts to enable them to make and to achieve the goals that they set for themselves. The Pro Vice Chancellor for International Strategy, Dr. Jennifer Barnes, has visited a large number of sites in Africa. But I have to now start looking as to where the university itself is going to position itself. Projects and programs are fantastic, but we all know they have a finite time, which is dependent, whether we like it or not, on the funding that's actually available. And in the usual Cambridge way, you've been fantastic about obtaining funding. You know, I always equate Cambridge academics to being the best robber barons on the sea, and if there's money on the sea, they'll find some way of getting it. But the university's got to do something more. We have to ask ourselves two questions. Why are we doing this? At a personal level, the answers for me relate in some ways to what Sheila touched on. I was given this wonderful opportunity in 1986. Was called in by the erstwhile Keith Peters into his office, which, believe me, if you're a junior doctor and you're called in by Keith Peters, you really start worrying. He dragged me in and he said, "I've got a great opportunity for you, Boris," and usually that means trouble. "The opportunity is, I want you out in the Gambia in 7 days' time." So I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, look, the doctor's fallen ill there, the only consultant physician in the country. They desperately need somebody to look after the hospitals up and down the river." So I thought, okay. My mind was whirring, and I thought that I would really frighten my wife when I got home. I know she'd been planning that weekend to go back to West Wales, where we hail from. And I was going to say, when she said in that usual way, "Oh, are you ready to go next week?" "No, I'm not, because I'm off to the Gambia." Wives have a strange habit of really surprising you. Because when I said that, what she said is, "You've talked about it long enough, why don't you go and do it?" And it's a challenge that is really important, because it's a challenge that drives you to engagement with a problem instead of just flitting around on the surface. And that is what our academics do in this area. And it gets under your skin in the healthcare area. I can wax lyrical about it and talk about it, but at the end of the day, you deal and work with communities who want to work with you. It is amazing what you can achieve, even if the resources are limited. And that has never left me. So even though my day job is looking after the university as a whole, I do two things. One of the areas that I'm particularly involved in is I chair the DFID Research Advisory Board, which is how DFID invests its money on research. And this works with the Chief Scientific Advisor, and I took that on when I was leaving the research councils. And there is a strategy for the developing countries in relationship to research. As always, it's never widely talked about, but there are three thematic areas which relate to the speech that I actually gave in Monash. It's health, agriculture, and education. And that triad has not been chosen by random or thinking why those three matter. It's chosen because at the lowest economic unit of a village or elsewhere, if you do something for one of those areas and ignore the other two, you actually will have failed because the system is holistic at that economic unit level. I'll give you a straight example. If you happen to have tuberculosis, you'll pull your kids out of school in order to increase productivity because the agricultural yield will have fallen down. Without the yield from agriculture, you have got no spare resource to actually invest in thinking about anything else. Similarly, if the crops fail, your health will actually not do very well, and at the same time, you will try and enhance yield by pulling kids out of school so their education fails. Making a difference in any of these three areas will make a huge difference to Africa. Food. I'm always told there's more than enough food on this planet. Well, great, it's in Europe and North America. The amount of carbon we'll have to use to get that food to particular sites is so great, we'll destroy the planet in the process. So we need engagement in country to actually enable farmers to increase their yield. And they will have to do so with dwindling water resources. If we don't tackle it, I'm sorry, I can see my grandkids getting involved in nasty little wars up and down, not big campaigns, but nasty little wars over a watering hole as a resource gets scarce. It's totally understandable that those interactions will happen. It is in our interest as a country, as Europe, and as academics to make sure that we actually engage with these problems on the ground. And that's what we intend to do. Pauline Rose, who's recently joined us here in the Faculty of Education, and I can't quite see with the lights here, she may be in the audience, but do challenge her. She wrote what I think is one of the most influential reports I've ever had the privilege of reading. She made a big mistake. She came in and gave me a copy of this report. It's about 400 pages. The trouble is, I have a habit of wanting to read these if people give them to me. But in essence, that report makes several fascinating observations. If you could just educate girls to the level of upper primary or early secondary education, you will cut maternal mortality, childhood mortality, without any additional investment in the healthcare sector. If you can actually enhance the quality of teaching in schools, that is more than and better than building more schools. What they've been able to show is the class size is less important than the quality of the teacher that's actually engaging in this. So supporting teachers, ensuring that we can play our part in building a cadre of individuals who can raise aspirations and raise all of those activities is something we as an institution, I'm going to say it, I believe have a responsibility to do, not just something that is nice to do. That concept of responsibility is one I kept on echoing through the October 1st speech this year. Responsibility of a university that claims to be global like Cambridge is a responsibility to others. It isn't just a responsibility to ourselves. We are a trusted institution. We have first-class academics. We have wonderful people here who from very early times that they join us here in Cambridge want to make a difference. And actually, as a university, we have to say to them, we want you to make a difference. Fine, if your work is going to be so blue skies, it's going to be actually located in a university, that's wonderful. But there are very many people who'd like to make a difference in other ways, and we need to encourage them as much as we would encourage those in some of our major departments in the arts, humanities, and sciences. We need to grasp that opportunity of responsibility. We talk about the threats, and you know, I've echoed those as particular issues. But what opportunities? You know, we're not talking about a country, we're talking about a continent here. We're talking about an opportunity to make a difference for millions of people in the future. And you're not telling me in that whole continent that you see on that poster, there aren't 5, 10, 15 times as many better people than those that we actually recruit to Cambridge. It's a real opportunity to engage with them and to make sure that they have the opportunity to deliver of their best, not just in Cambridge, but working together with us to build up the type of core opportunity that they can deliver in their own backyard. And we should be proud that we can support them in actually that form of engagement. So let's stop thinking about Africa as a problem. I'm fed up of hearing that from one newspaper to another. And let's start talking, this is a great opportunity for us to engage. My own personal engagement in this is, as Sheila's referred to, is engagement with a group in Tres Cantos. This all started from a single premise in collaboration with GSK and talking about this with Patrick Vallance. And it starts by stopping thinking about the issues and the problems of IP and everything else. Let's start off with a premise that if we're going to make a difference to some of the diseases that afflict that whole continent, nobody is going to be able to afford the medication. But around Europe and around North America, we have many people who are actually very interested in some of those neglected diseases. We also have to understand, and now I'm in dangerous territory, that actually academics are absolutely rubbish at developing drugs. They don't know how to do it. Out there are professionals who do. And therefore, by building a partnership between industry, which is independent of that industry, it allows discoveries in these fields to have an opportunity to develop an agent that might make a difference. The deal is very simple. The company, if the individual decides to develop that agent with the company, will actually make that drug available to TDT, and therefore to allow the distribution network to go to countries where they actually cannot afford to pay. Now, that is not a model I'm going to say should actually permeate the pharmaceutical industry. To me, it's a practical solution for a very practical problem, and it's one that I'm proud to be associated with. So what's the university going to do about it? Quite rightly, you should challenge me and say, fine words and phrases, Boris, but as usual, the university is keeping its pockets very closed. It's a standard accusation of the university. Well, we're not. We're trying to support the Cambridge in Africa program with posts that are to help coordinate and manage the area. And I'm very determined that we will have PhD studentships which will be in country, linked to Cambridge, to enable those teams that have got programs on the ground to really appoint PhDs who can study and do their PhD in country and then spend time in Cambridge to get that benefit here. It's novel, it's different, it's challenging, but it's something that can deliver something quite exceptional and build a relationship that has the real opportunity to be a sustainable relationship instead of the usual quick in-out that some of our friends in North America are so prone to do in developing countries. So I'm very committed to this program. I'm very committed to what David and everybody here has been able to achieve so far. I actually believe we've done nothing more than to start to get into the foothills of these particular Himalayas. It's a problem the scale of which I cannot see that one institution can work. And it is in that mind that I threw the challenge out to the so-called global universities, or those of us who like to think of ourselves as global universities. Let's say the top 15, 20 universities that exist there. We use the terminology global. We talk about internationally leading. How much are we prepared to give up of our influence, which we take to ourselves, the autonomy we take to ourselves, and work with institutions in the South, or however you wish to play it, to enable those institutions to start having a real say in how their countries are run and how their academics can actually be supported? The president of the University of Ghana was talking to me the other day, and his line was very simple. He said, the best thing you can do, Boris, is actually talk to the government. If I ring up the prime minister and say, I want to talk to you about the universities, I will get a polite no. If they know you are coming, they will roll out the red carpet. You can do more to advocate for us than we can do internally. Just think of a world if the top 15 universities started to say to some of these governments, if you do not support higher education, we can't actually help you. You need to support your own scholars because that is a sustainable model. And a country without a university, no matter how difficult the primary and secondary education system is a country that is going to go nowhere in the longer term. It can't rely on that elsewhere. And I can genuinely say that because in the Gambia where I was working, there was no university. And it was extremely difficult to see you were always working with imported medical staff because there was no way of actually creating the training environment that would enable the country to look after its own problems. So the challenges are legion. Quality is still the parameter that we have to instill, and it's a parameter that we have to make sure that is there right at the forefront of what universities in country want to do. Our three keywords were uttered by Harvey McGrath at the closing of the internal announcement of the university's new campaign. And it's the challenge I'm going to throw to you. This is not about personal aggrandizement. It's about interdisciplinarity, collaboration, and that much maligned word, partnership. Partnership is not being better than your partner. Partnership is working with your partner. A collaboration of equals, people who can contribute in different ways to the solution of a problem. I had the privilege of working with Richard Sykes, and he always used to have a saying, there is no such thing as partnership. His view was it was a takeover by one side or t'other. You would know that he was quite renowned for his attempts at takeovers. But he's wrong. And I believe that partnership is the essence of academic collaboration, to bring people together, to see a shared goal. And we can bring the university to bring that aspiration of quality, that aspiration of sustainability, and that aspiration that your programs, your ideas, will make a difference. If we can't make a difference, then I will start despairing. But I'm actually an optimist, and I genuinely believe that we can make a difference, and maybe even shame one or two others into saying we should be there as well. Thank you very much.